He clinched first place in his division about 20 years ago, and he has never looked back. Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports. It's on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. The long weekend is upon us. A lot of people probably stuck in traffic right now, and we will get you through it, folks, wherever you are heading over the course of the next couple hours. The round table begins with, for those that are watching, I'm just tuning in, theater of the mind here. To my left, John Shannon from Sportsnet. To my right, Mike Zeisberger from the Toronto Sun and from Sportsnet, Arash Madani. Good to see all of you. John, we spent a great deal of time yesterday talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we'll do so, I think, to kick things off, just to get out of the way.
Isn't the season over? Isn't it done? Can't we take a rest?
Well,
didn't the finals used to end now, John?
Well, do you know that, 30 years ago today, the Islanders won their fourth consecutive cup against the Edmonton Oilers. 30 years ago today. That was the end of the season. May 17th.
And now round two is just beginning.
Well, but this is a bit of an anomaly. So it's 30 years ago today at the Nassau Coliseum, state-of-the-art arena back then. It wasn't even state-of-the-art back then. But right. That tells you the length of the hockey season now.
Why do they take so many days off in between?
It's the
same thing in the NBA as well.
Well, it's television. NBA's even worse. It's television.
Why do they do that? I mean, the NBA last week had a day where they had 3-4 series still going on and had a completely dark night.
Yeah, it was a Thursday.
Yeah.
That was the wacko thing about that. It's strictly for TV and scheduling. The other thing is that in the United States, they want the final normally in a normal 82-game season to start after the regular May sweeps. So that means the Monday of Memorial Day weekend or the Tuesday after Memorial Day weekend, that's when they want the final to start.
I got to think that there's issues with building availability now, too, given that it is not the regular type of season. Would you not think, John, that maybe like there were some concerts booked or that even when the lockout was on?
They still had to make their dates available, and that's one of the reasons. All those cancellations we got in October, November, December, Mike, weren't for the fans. And they were to warn the players, shot across the bow, and to also let the arena operators, the owners, say, okay, I got 30 more days, I can go find something for a couple of dates there. So by the time January came and everybody kind of knew in the back of the mind that we were going back to work, everybody had to clear clear April, May, and June for playoffs.
But basketball's the same. I mean, you think back. The epic Lakers-Celtics 85 finals, game one, the Memorial Day Massacre, was game one of the finals.
Yeah.
And now here we are a week removed from Memorial Day, and it's still the second round of the playoffs with the
NBA's always been a little later in my mind. I can always remember, because I love the NBA, and finishing the Stanley Cup final and taking that 7 to 10 days is what my wife describes as re-entry.
Hey, careful now, careful.
No, it's true. Re-entry period where nobody can speak to you and you just want to go to bed and you want to sleep in and please just don't bother me. I got to get back on the
planet. It's good she gave you a whole week.
What are you getting out of it?
No, I don't think she gave me a whole week. I took the week. I don't think she gave it. Anyway, so that re-entry. And so I always remember watching the final during re-entry.
Well, you know what? One interesting thing is now that it's going to be pushed back to what? Like... Oh, is that her on the phone right now?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just me.
Eric being a pervert.
I'm not saying a word. There's not cameras on me, are there?
But if the Kings get back in there, say to the final, okay, and you're going to have, potentially, June 26th, 27th, the game in L.A., all the questions about the ice, and I'll bring back something, John, when the Dallas Stars were doing their run.
Sure.
Our mutual friend, Al Strachan, he would keep writing about how bad the ice was at Reunion Arena. And finally, another one of our buddies, a Hall of Famer, Eric Duhatchek, came up and said, Strach, it is Texas in June. The ice is going to be crap.
We actually, that series, whether it was the 99 or the 2000 series, I still remember between the team warm-up and the actual start of the game, walking to the Zamboni entrance doors and being able to pick up a chunk of ice.
Wow.
Probably the size of a slice of pizza. And being, and because it, and it just wouldn't stick. It just, I mean, and then you'd have arguments. So Danny Craig, the ice guy, is that humidity or is that temperature? and then my friend Gary would say, that's not, don't talk about humidity. Well, so there was always something.
Now, it could have been even worse in L.A. had the Clippers or the Lakers actually extended and you'd be, you know, picking up the floor and putting down the ice and the floor and the ice back and forth. But would you, can you manage the ice situation in L.A. now that they're the only game in town and crank down the AC and hopefully keep it that much cooler even in the midst of the hot air blowing outside in L.A.?
I can't imagine anybody keeping it cooler than what happens in Toronto. Forget about L.A. I mean, it's cold at the Air Canada.
Oh, it's freezing. Even for the basketball games, it's freezing.
So, I mean, from that perspective, and the Staples Center, just because there's no basketball doesn't mean the Staples Center's not being used either.
Right.
I mean, whether it's university graduations, it is always, always being rented out. And the ice just sits under the plywood. And
I think it was last year they said there was over 300 dates. It was something ridiculous.
Well, the ice at the Garden for the first round of the Leafs series was bad. And, you know, for game one, Thursday they were setting up for Northeastern's graduation. Friday afternoon was the graduation. Friday evening was Knicks Celtics. And then Saturday was game two of the Leafs Bruins series.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to be poor.
Well, last night before overtime, when the two teams were on the ice at the TD Garden, they found a patch of ice that had like ripples in it, and they were discussing, you know, do we bring the Zambonis back or whatever? And then both coaches kind of snickered and said, yeah, just go ahead and play with it.
In fact, I think it was the Zamboni that caused it. I think they had an auger issue with the Zamboni last night, one of the two Zambonis.
So that's why the goal went in overtime then. See, now we can segue back to the Leafs.
So it must
I know
have...
John's trying to avoid it at all costs here.
You know what?
It's still this is the water cooler topic in the city.
Only in Southern Ontario.
Right, in the city.
Well, we're a national show.
We're 5 days removed.
We are also the center of the universe.
Which is why everybody in the nine other provinces get driven nuts about this. I mean, we pay no attention to a $480 million arena being built in Edmonton, but we're still worried about the overtime goal that the Leafs had. I mean, my goodness gracious.
Well, the Oilers didn't make the playoffs, so when they make the playoffs, we'll start talking
about
that.
They're boys for greatness. Just ask Kevin Lowe.
That's right.
All right, let's not worry about the series then and what ultimately happened, but seeing as John doesn't want in on this, I'll go to him last. What did the Leafs do in the offseason with the two, well, let's say three biggest questions? Phil Kessel, Dion Phaneuf, James Reimer, in no particular order. Zeiss, I'll start with you.
Oh, great. Thanks for that. You know what? I think the first thing they have to do is get, and I'm sure they've done some kicking tires on this, but you have to check the landscape. What kind of salaries are these guys going to command? And I think Dave Nonis yesterday was, you know, obviously he's not as bombastic and as Berkey was, but he did come out and say, you know what? We have a figure for Tyler Bozak in mind. And if it fits, then we will go forward. He also, I remember talking to him about a month before the trade deadline, asking, are you pushing to re-sign Tyler Bozak? And his claim was, you know what? I've always found that if a guy wants to play in your city, you can find a way out of that. Now, my response to that would be, you know what? You show a guy more money and he'll love another city.
No question. No question. I think before we get too far ahead on anything, the buyout issue has to be determined and what they're going to do with Mikhail Grabowski, because that's a big piece of your cap puzzle and what's going to happen there. Is Grabowski part of your plan or not? If he's not, you have a little bit more loot to play with and you really need a center. Then you get to the Kessel and the Phaneuf situation. But I would think Reimer would be a priority this offseason to get extended. I wouldn't want to have a situation, if I'm the Leafs, to have that guy be a UFA at the end of next season.
How did you define both Randy and Dave's comments about Reimer at the press conference?
I thought that Dave was a little stronger in his endorsement than Randy was. Randy's kind of was, well, you know what? if we had a chance to get the best goalie in the world, wouldn't you?
Right.
Now, we didn't ask him if he thought Luongo was the best goalie in the world. He is, by the way, the best goalie in the world on Twitter.
No question. Yeah, so the Reimer for Sochi hashtag on the tweet was terrific.
See, I was shocked that there wasn't a better endorsement for Reimer based on what he did down the stretch in the regular season.
Sure.
And what he did for most of the games in the series against Boston. I thought there would be a bigger endorsement, certainly from Randy, and even a little bit more from Dave.
But the only guy who really got an endorsement was Kessel.
Yeah. Correct. Correct.
We don't have to have Tyler Bozak.
Yeah.
Was the line from Dave Nonis.
Yeah.
Only Kessel got, and to me, I almost wondered if that was the first step in trying to raise his value publicly to be traded.
It's funny, to a man, since Monday night, to a man, and Mike, you talked to many of the same people that I do within the Maple Leafs. To a man, the one person they raved about was Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
Yep.
They talked about him playing 200-foot hockey. They talked about his enthusiasm. They even talked about his leadership, which, you know, quite frankly, none of us have really seen until this series. And they talked about his passion to play the game, mm-hmm. which none of us have really seen until this series. So that's for you to think that they may be, you know, building up the stock price is an interesting thought. I think they're trying to do it in order to justify signing him. I really do.
Let me ask this. If let's just say they're keeping Kessel for a second. Go back to your Grabowski point and the fact that you got to figure out financially if he's back or not, and then if you've got money. If they were to buy him out, let him go. And then to factor in, we don't necessarily have to have Tyler Bozak. Now, maybe they use some of that money to actually sign Bozak, but could this team, based on its offense, would you have enough? Is there enough in the system? What would you have to address outside of just a centerman if you lost Grabowski and Bozak from your offense going forward?
You know, one of the issues with the Maple Leafs is, and Mike, you've been around this organization as long as some of us, is that people and this city view the players on the Toronto Maple Leafs 30 to 40% better than they really are.
Sure.
And so that guys that we think deserve to be in the Hall of Fame really, in many times, are middle of the road guys in the rest of the league. I think they can live without both of them.
Yeah.
I really do. They are. You can plug bodies into these situations. The bottom line is, for this club, they do not have a number one centerman. They don't. I mean, it's like it's trying to find a point guard, Eric.
Mm.
They don't have one.
But you know what, John? That debate's been going on for a long time, and
sure it
very much is legitimate.
Well, since
legitimate,
Matt's retired.
But, you know, I get a chuckle sometimes because, yeah, it is a pressing need. But how many teams do have a bona fide number one centerman?
Well, I would tell you that the eight going into the playoffs, still in the playoffs, do.
Yeah.
And that's who you have to compete against down the line. You know, I mean, and there are some that might have two.
Well, you know, you could argue, I mean, depending on how you view Jordan Staal, that, you know, Carolina has 1A and 1B.
Right.
But that was that went was in part of their deal. But I think one thing that Nonis brought up yesterday that we have to keep in mind, because the cap's going down, and he made this point, it's the first time. A lot of times there was belief that it was going to happen, and then the revenues came in, and then teams found, you know what, we can still keep a lot of our guys because it actually went up.
Right.
This time, it's going down. It's not changing, okay? There are going to be teams that have to shed.
Right.
And like he said, in the weeks heading up to the draft, there in the days heading up to the draft, Nonis thinks that there could be more activity and more big activity in the league because of that reason than we've seen in a long time.
Well, I think, first of all, everybody but the eight teams still alive can trade now. Like, the Leafs can make a trade today. So you know darn well the phones are ringing and discussing issues at certain points with those 22 other teams that are still out there. I said it last night on Hockey Central. By the way, the Leafs didn't win a playoff series.
Right.
You know, they're still not very good. They're better. They're improved. They are really fun to watch. They are fun to watch, and I give, you know, a lot of people credit for the style of hockey they play. But they have more than two or three holes to fill at this point.
But they were real fun to watch, and they played at an exceptional level during the playoffs. The last 2 weeks of the regular season, there were times they were downright awful.
Yeah.
But where I would, you know, and having covered those Pat Quinn teams in the early 2000s that were very competitive, and I mean, they were obviously better, I would say, I think we'd all agree, than this team is. But the difference being, when I look at this team, is how many guys that they have that are 25, 26 years old or younger. When is the last time we could say that about this team?
But the question becomes is, do you need to invest in your 25 and 26-year-old guys now? Remember that when Pat Quinn was the manager and the coach, you held players till they were 31.
Yep.
You know, so the world has changed with free agency. You know, Tyler Bozak is a winner. One way or the other, Tyler Bozak will win.
Yes.
Financially. It may be here, although, I mean, the only thing Dave didn't say yesterday was hometown discount.
Mm-hmm.
But that's obviously what he's expecting.
Connect the dots,
expecting to get as a hometown discount. But at the same time, I think Randy is really, I mean, Randy understands this better than most, and Randy has leverage right now with his position in the organization after Brian left to be able to say, I'm not playing him.
Yep.
I'm not playing him,
mm-hmm.
which is what he did to Tim Connolly.
Yeah.
And that's
Mike
why Tim
Komisarek.
Komisarek, Lombardi before he got traded.
Yeah.
I'm not playing these guys. And I would suggest that the discussions between the coach and the manager now are, listen, I've seen my team for 48 games. I've seen my team for 7 games. This guy is not going to win us a playoff game.
Yep.
This guy can. We better invest in this person. And I think they're going to go through the whole roster. And who knows what those opinions are and how many of those guys that Randy really wants to invest time in.
Here's what we don't know about this team and this group and this coaching staff is, and this is what I was very intrigued about, and it's just, I mean, we don't know the answer to this. 48 game season, this is what the Leafs were, this is what they were. But in an 82 game season, who and what are they? I mean, that to me, I thought the Leafs, they didn't have a lot of playoff experience and showed in game 7, but they had the fresh legs to play 3 games in 4 days, 5, 6, and 7. They didn't hit that wall because there was no time to hit that wall. There were no dog days this regular season because it was so fast. What is this team on a full canvas? I don't know. And what can this group do over 82? I don't know. I don't know if management or the coaching staff.
With a team in Philadelphia and Carolina that's going to be hungry to get back in, and let alone others that are going to be chomping at the bit to grab that 8 seed, let alone higher.
Well, I mean, there are some people that would have suggested the way the team played, as you described the last 2 weeks of the season, that was the typical Maple Leaf swoon at the 50-game mark.
Right.
That maybe this team in an 82-game schedule wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You were talking about Randy Carlyle, John, and his evaluation or his feeling towards certain players. The lightning rod seems to still be Dion Phaneuf as your captain, as a $6.5 million guy, as a number one defenseman, or is he? How does Randy Carlyle, guys, feel about Dion Phaneuf? And more specifically, how does Dave Nonis feel about Dion Phaneuf with the price tag that's attached to him and the C that's on his chest?
I'd love to know the real answer to that question.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, they do keep it very close to the vest.
They sure do.
But at the same time, when you look at the depth that the Maple Leafs have in defense, there's no question that, you know, he probably is still their best defenseman. But is he a one? Or is he a two? Or is he a three?
And is he a C?
Well, you know what, I'm one of those guys, I think the world has changed with the captaincy. I really do. I mean, that's, to me, Tony Romo has a C on, too. What does that mean, you know? You know, come on.
Yeah, but football also has 8 captains.
Well, but I just, you know, I mean, I think the guys in that.
Tony's a great captain, John. September, October, November. Yeah. December's the issue.
You're
with
a Viking
Tony.
Fan. Yeah. You're a Viking fan. The I would tell you that the players in that room know who the leaders are. And whether they just shake their head at Dion being the captain or they like Dion being the captain, I think it's immaterial. The question is, can he perform at an elite level? And there were times that he played very well. The problem is when he did make major gaffes. They were major gaffes.
Yeah, major.
You know, and in the playoffs, if you analyze his ice time, when he got over in the playoffs now, not the regular season, if he got over 23 minutes, four out of the five games that he played over 23 minutes, the Leafs lost. And, you know, he can't, when you play at that level in playoff hockey, you have to have more bodies.
Yeah.
And that right now, the Leafs don't have those bodies. Frazier being hurt didn't help. But Mark Frazier's not a, no, he's not a one, right. Two, or three either.
Yeah.
But you also
your
have the
fortunes
question that,
cannot be tied to Mark Frazier.
No.
I'm not sure they can be tied to Dion Phaneuf either.
Well, they're,
you know, and I mean, that, and I think that's a bigger issue. I'm not, and I think that becomes what will happen in order for this team to improve. Are they going to have to rob Peter to pay Paul?
So based on that, do you let him just play out the last year of the contract and then let the chips fall at the end of next season? Do you even consider trying to go into extension talks? Are you looking to move him? What do you do?
What can you do? I don't know if that's a $6.5 million movable piece. Who takes that contract on?
Especially with the cap going down.
Right.
I mean, that's...
I would suggest that that's a discussion for late February. Where is the team? Are they in the playoff hunt?
Yeah.
Where are they going? Can somebody turn Dion around to help the organization get to the Stanley Cup final?
And pick up the tab for only 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And pick up the tab. I mean, I look at Robin Regier. Look what Buffalo moved Robin Regier to Daryl Sutter, who loves him. All of a sudden, Robin Regier is playing like manageable minutes, 21, 22 minutes.
Right.
And the Kings look unstoppable.
Yeah, the Sabres don't have Drew Doughty on the back end.
No, that's right.
But just as a quick footnote on this Leaf thing, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but hashtag David Clarkson seems to have exploded in Toronto because all the Leaf fans think that, you know, because he is, a pending free agent, he's a Toronto kid, he grew up, worshiping Wendell Clark, and that's all well and good. But there's 28 other teams plus the Devils that would like David Clarkson, sure, as well. So let's not be penciling him into the lineup quite yet.
I like a hashtag that's not Rob Ford when you talk about Toronto.
Hashtag July 5th.
After the last 24 right, hours. Yeah. We'll keep it with MLSE when we continue. We'll move aside from the Leafs and some news in Raptor land as it relates to Brian Colangelo and a deadline that might be coming for the Toronto Raptors and Tim Leiwicki and the Board of Governors on Monday, whether they decide to pick up the option on Brian Colangelo or not. We will discuss that when we continue. Arash Madani, Mike Zeisberger, John Shannon, Eric Smith in for Bob McCown. It's Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
The 2013 MasterCard Memorial Cup. Tonight at 8, Sportsnet590.ca.
Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCown, and it is Chili's Friday on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. So thanks to the folks at Chili's for providing some fine eats that we will be devouring.
Thank you, Heath.
And partaking in the next commercial break. We don't have it yet, but I mean, today's feature. I love this. The feature on the roundtable. We have burger bites with sautéed onions, bacon, melted cheese, quesadilla, explosion salad with homemade citrus balsamic vinaigrette dressing. Does that sound pretty good? Quesadillas with Monterey Jack cheese with marinated onions and green peppers. So it's solid. And stay tuned for details on the launch of Margarita Madness all summer long at Chili's.
Are those out there too?
I hope there are. Well, look at, I've got the shaker. We can get it going. So if you just get me some booze, we can get some margaritas going.
Shockingly,
right,
Arash and I have shared a few of those.
Margaritas? Yes?
Yes.
Where?
Yeah. At the elbow room. Yes.
That story's probably better than anything else we're going to talk about. Why don't we discuss that?
No, well, there's a reason why we haven't.
Well, they can't remember is why.
Well, yeah, and it's been 2 years, so.
I don't. Guys, there are people.
Arash is very quiet right now.
Looking at you very.
He was for 2 days later.
Yeah, it was for 2 days. I felt concussed for 2 days. I couldn't see sunlight.
He was in the dark room, all right. Yeah. We both were.
So thanks again to the folks at Chili's for the Friday Roundtable Eats. Again, Chili's Fridays right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, is Brian Colangelo going to be drinking on Monday? Cheering or drinking and drowning his sorrows? What do you think the Raptors might do? Doug Smith of the Toronto Star had the story just before, I believe, 3 o'clock this afternoon, that there is a deadline Monday for the Toronto Raptors, for Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, the Board of Governors, to pick up the option on his contract or not. Which way do you think MLSE is leaning right now as far as Brian Colangelo goes?
I'm not sure what direction MLSE is leaning in, but I think their new boss has made it pretty clear that he would like to go in a different direction. And I would be I'd be shocked if next Friday we're sitting around this same table and Brian Colangelo is still the general manager of the Toronto Raptors.
So if he's not, if we go based on that, if he's not a fan of Colangelo's, why have they not made a move yet to this point and made an announcement?
Well, I first of all, I don't think they've had to, Eric. The other thing was the board only met on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So that Lywicki would have laid out part of his plan to the board at that point. Colangelo would have also been part of the board presentation of what goes on the basketball side. And then between, you know, Doug's story today, which is an excellent story about the deadline being Monday, and the fact that MLSE has hired a headhunter to go hire or go look at other management opportunities. And you know, any new CEO is going to say, well, I'm just doing my due diligence. I just want to know that if Colangelo's here, is he the right guy? But at the same time, you know, with Lywicki's background, with how plugged in he is around professional sports in North America, you have to think that if Colangelo was staying, it would have happened by now.
Well, I want to throw it out to you guys. You know more, a little more about hoops. I'm more of a pucks guy. But does he deserve another shot? I mean, how long is this rebuild going to last? Because we saw in the hockey part of it how impatient people got when the plan didn't work out.
Two completely different things, though.
Why?
Because
how many rebuilds do the Raptors need?
I agree with you. They have hit the refresh button 4 times now. Perhaps 5, depending on how you want to
but
categorize.
How many in Brian's time? Not five times in Brian's time.
No, but 3? Depends how you want to categorize the Rudy Gay thing.
Well, okay, if you go with Rudy Gay and Bosch's departure and the ultimate meltdown that led to Bosch's departure.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say 2. Fair enough?
Sure.
See, the thing, I think that's the question that Lywicki is asking himself. Well, hold on now. Five years, isn't 5 years enough for a guy to have the opportunity to rebuild an organization? And, you know, certainly the Bosch issue ended up being a bad, you know, bump in the road for this organization. But I think that's a fair question, Mike. I really do. And I think that's the question that Tim Lywicki's asking.
But I don't think the Bosch issue is as significant as some of the other moves that haven't worked.
Well, this is a team, you know, when I look at basketball, I find that of all the four major sports, basketball can give you the biggest impact player out of the draft if you're drafting in the top 10.
Ask the Golden State Warriors.
Potentially. Okay. And it just doesn't seem like in his tenure that they have got that gem. It always seems that when you look back at last year's draft 2-3 years ago, you always find a team that's picking below them that managed to find a gem that they didn't get.
The way I've kind of looked at Colangelo, and I've been saying this for a few months now doing the post game with the Raptors as well, if we look at the 5 years, the first of those 5 years was a massive disappointment year in which I think Colangelo was too quick in the trigger on Sam Mitchell 15 games into the season, right. One game below 500.
Yeah, right.
And they fell flat on their face under Jay Triano at 33-49. Jay came back. That next season, you say what you will about Hedo Turkoglu and whatever. On paper, that was a good acquisition, acquiring one of the top guys out there with a threesome, a three-headed monster with Bargnani, Turkoglu, and Bosch that was at the very least an eighth seed in the East. That was a playoff team. Bosch breaks his nose coming down the stretch, doesn't play the last X number of games. The Raptors blow a game at home on their own floor to the Bulls, which had they won, would have secured them that eighth seed. Chicago wins. Chicago goes on to grab the eighth seed. They end up being playoff team since, Derrick Rose, etc. But those, to me, were 2 years right there where Colangelo, I think, made a mistake in the first year. The second year, I would put more on the players or the coach, not on the GM. Now, Bosch leaves. Should Colangelo have traded Chris Bosch before he walked?
But okay, if it's on it's on the coach, then why was the interim tag removed and made permanent?
With Jay, you mean?
Right.
Yeah.
But I think my point is that second year was a playoff team, and at the All-Star break, the Raptors had more wins at the All-Star break than they've ever had in franchise history, and they were four and a half games behind the Celtics for number one in the division. To me, you're not trading Chris Bosh at that point.
Right.
Now, he rolls the dice, he loses Bosh, he gets very little back. Now you're in rebuild mode.
But he got
mode.
Something back.
We're three seasons into the rebuild.
But doesn't...
Is at year three, should this team already be an 8th seed, a 6th seed, a 4th seed, well, and already back climbing the top?
How many drafts has he been in terms?
Well, then that, and so this goes back in the end. Won't the Bargnani drafting haunt Colangelo for his whole time here and how he's managed?
And that was the very first one.
But his first one. It's not his first draft. His first Raptor one. This guy's an experienced NBA guy.
But to be fair, John, who else are you going to take number one in that draft?
Well, you know what, Arash, I don't know, but at the same point,
and I'm not a Colangelo guy, but look at that draft and.
But at a certain point, you have to get off the pot too.
Yes,
and you have to realize, by the way, my career is going to be linked to this
absolutely
person for the next 10 years.
Person.
Well, you know, I'm not McCowan. You know, I don't use those words, and
not on the air.
Well, stop me. So the question then becomes. The question then becomes is, at what point do you make a change?
Yeah,
and that's,
right.
I mean, this is the cold-hearted fact of running a basketball team or any sports team.
Or any sport. The foundation of your team is the draft.
And I don't think that...
And what are the five drafts? What are his five drafts? Are they any good? All five guys.
Well, you think about...
They didn't have one.
DeRozan's one,
right?
Correct.
DeRozan, Ed Davis, Valanciunas.
Okay. And Bargnani.
Yeah.
How are they?
I think that, to me, looking beyond the draft, because I think DeRozan is good, not great. Ed Davis was okay, and he turned into Rudy Gay. Now, Rudy Gay, I think, is a good player, but not at $17.5 million. And right. Valanciunas is a very good pick.
You can't worry about the money. Is he good enough to play for the Raptors? And
I think you absolutely have to worry about the money.
Because it
hamstrings you in terms of making other moves to improve the talent on your roster.
Well, then, you know what? Then, if Rudy Gay is going to be the cornerstone of your organization, you better darn well win, period.
Well,
I don't care how much money he's making.
No, but I think the bigger knock overall, if you're looking for criticism beyond the draft, I don't think the draft is as much of an issue as perhaps if you talk about free agency. When you look back and think about some of the free agent signings, whether it be Fred Jones and Jason Capono, and the list goes on of guys that have not worked out for the Raptors Hedo Turkoglu. The free agent signings for this team have not been good.
So it's not for lack of trying, but it is the subjectivity of his judgment.
If you're a power hitter and you're not slugging, you're not a power hitter anymore.
Okay. So
fair enough.
I mean, to me, and I think that that's the dilemma, and I think that's what Wiki's going through and saying, okay, what have we done here? What's my analysis of what's gone on with this organization at this point?
I just can't see Wicky coming in and stressing patience. I mean, I think
he's not a patient
person.
Well, and the other thing is, and Eric and I touched on this yesterday, basketball in this city is on the verge of becoming a fringe sport.
Yep.
There isn't a hardcore, a large hardcore sports fan following the NBA here anymore. And there's going to be 15,000 guys jump up and down and yell saying, I follow the NBA. That's not a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of people. And the Raptors are becoming an afterthought. And that's one of the things when you talk about Lywicki's personality.
And there's three basketball guys sitting around the table here who are in agreement.
Do you know how many basketball games I went to this year? And I love the game. And you know how many basketball games I went to this year? None.
Let me ask you this. Based on what you said yesterday and what you've just repeated right now, John, I asked Michael Grange about this earlier in the show. If Colangelo's not back, based on the unique market, based on the market going down, the ratings not being great on television, radio, fan base dwindling, fringe sport potentially, it's definitely not a global team or a national team or a national game right now. Nobody in Halifax or Vancouver really cares about the Raptors right now, let alone many in the GTA. How important is it, if you're looking for a successor to Brian Colangelo, to have somebody that doesn't just know the NBA and isn't a good evaluator of talent NBA-wise? Do you need to know this market, know the intricacies of MLSC, of the television market, of all of that stuff that goes with the uniqueness of this one?
It all goes away, Eric. None of it matters if you have success. This city will back a winner.
Winner. Just win. Just win, baby.
Yeah.
You know? I think we overplay the Canadian card. I do think this is a different market. I do think this is a totally different aspect. But I do think that when you're talking about NBA players and you're talking about getting NBA talent, you have NBA money here. You have big league money here.
Yep.
You just need the best person to have the best judgment of basketball talent, both on the college side and in the free agent world.
I think ultimately you guys are right that winning matters, but having traveled around with these guys for almost a decade, and granted they have not been winning, so that plays into it. So they're not carrying themselves with this, you know, chest puffed out, we're a winning team. But the issues, bogus or otherwise, with customs and with coming into a different country and all that stuff, I hear it all the time. Even from the guys that say, I love Toronto, but, and the issues with travel, going through the airport, not being able to go here, there, different money, all that stuff, you're still hearing the same things. So now, would winning cure that, period? Maybe.
How much of a factor does that create with free agents then? Do they look at that and say, I don't want to go there? But if this team was on the verge of winning, would they overlook that?
I think they would.
It didn't seem to stop Olajuwon from signing here. It didn't stop Vince Carter from re-signing here. And it didn't stop Antonio Davis from signing. I mean, I think that those are obviously built-in excuses for people who, when things get a little rough around the basketball world, they plug in the regular typical, oh, woe is me, I'm a Canadian excuse.
Yeah.
Well, that was the same argument. They were signing when they were winning.
That was the same argument with the Blue Jays.
Look at the Jays of the early 90s. Look at the guys that came through here. Paul Molitor, Jack Morris.
Dave Winfield.
I mean, we can go down the list of guys that, if they're not in the Hall of Fame, certainly are going to be on the ballot.
Right.
That we were fortunate enough to watch that wanted to sign with this team, and they had the same customs issues.
We will talk about the Blue Jays a little bit later on in the program, as well as they ride a 4-game winning streak as they head into New York tonight to tip off the weekend series against the Yankees. But speaking of baseball, more instant replay perhaps coming to Major League Baseball. It's on tap next. It's the Roundtable on Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
Blue Jays versus Yankees. Pregame with Mike Wilner tonight at 7. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. It's the Friday Roundtable with Mike Zeisberg of the Sun, Arash Madani from Sportsnet, John Shannon of Sportsnet. We've got a few minutes here, guys. Major League Baseball, we're going to talk Jays next hour, but Major League Baseball is considering expanding their replay rules vastly coming in 2014. Looking at adding a ton of things, including trap plays and fair and foul calls, but also perhaps considering whether they bring in replay on certain situations for balls and strikes. Too much, not enough. Would you like to see it expanded? If the technology exists, should it be there? John, I see you shaking your head already.
I don't know how you can do balls and strikes.
No.
I really don't. I think you can probably find a way to do a black and white situation of whether the foot was on the base before the ball got into the glove. At first base, then the question becomes is what do you do at second, third, and home?
Right.
Because I think you have to do it at all bases. It's not as if that's the only place a person could be thrown out. But if you get into the judgment world of calling balls and strikes, I think that we're making a real mistake. And you also have to wonder what the umpires' union is going to say about this too.
Yeah, balls and strikes, that's doomed. I couldn't see that. I wondered, though, you do a bit of tennis. When they talk about foul versus fair, could they ever do something where they have the same technology on the foul lines that they do
absolutely.
In tennis?
Absolutely. And the argument is it's going to slow down the game. That's always what the replay issue has been.
Because baseball is such a fast-moving game.
As is. The tennis thing is quick.
Yeah.
The tennis thing is relatively accurate. I mean, it's as accurate as you're going to get in a replay-type system. And it's accepted. There's no reason why that can't be if it's fair or foul.
But to be fair, Hawkeye is not at every tennis event.
No,
it's only at big events, ones that can afford it. And in baseball, because you know you have to be fair, you're going to have to do it in every stadium. And the problem becomes is that not every stadium is actually the same dimension.
Right.
We actually went through this when I was at the NHL we talked to the Hawkeye people, and that's one of the big issues that you have. It would certainly make some sense to try to do the Hawkeye. But at the same time, you know, there are other issues. I'd just like to get the video replay right.
Could you have any kind of challenge system, even with balls and strikes, where hold on. If it's one or two a game, I mean, you think about how many balls are thrown over the course of a game, and you're only going to give a manager one or two.
Good luck. With the umpire union with that one.
Well,
charge block in basketball.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I like the challenge flag.
Because, I like the challenge flag for certain things. There are still in the NFL, I think football has shown that the challenge flag system works, but there are still calls that are not reviewable.
See, to me, though, when I'm watching baseball, yeah, it's a judgment call, but if the four of us are all umpiring games, all four of us are going to have different strike zones, but one of the four of us is going to have a ball that's 5 inches off the plate that's nowhere even near a ball compared to yours that's only an inch off the plate. And it may be, as a manager, I should have the right to say, no, hold on a second. I'm throwing the flag on that one. That was so far outside. That can't be a ball.
But is he calling that a ball
to everybody?
Or Anders' strike? You know, having covered baseball earlier in my career, I know the one thing that a manager wants more than anything else, okay? Guys have different strike zones. That's fine. Be consistent. What you call a strike in the first inning, you want to have be a strike in the eighth inning.
I don't think you can go into the opinion of strike zones. Strike zones are, you know, vary with the size of the body as well, and that'll create a huge thing. Black and white, safer out, I would support.
But I am in favor of expanded replay on everything but balls and strikes. I think this is baseball's issue has always been we don't want to change.
More roundtable when we continue after 6:00.